across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Thursday morning, May 30th, 2024. And it is another, was it Melissa Kay that said it yesterday? It is another B-A-U-T-ful day to have you here up north. I just wanted to see if Greg was correcting my spelling over here.
What?
To have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota. B-E-A-U-T-ful.
She said
B-E-A-U-T-ful. Yeah, I got that right.
Yeah, you got it right.
Yeah.
Here to support you, Pat.
Thank you. Let's go with the different way. It's gorgeous. It's another gorgeous day.
Oh my God, Pat. if you could look outside right now, the sun is shining, the birds are chirping. My son's still single, but that's okay.
It's a gorgeous morning out here. Sun's up nice and early. It is highlighting what the farmer across the street here did. I mean, he cut up that whole hay field in record time, started raking it last night. And there's actually deer out in the field who are like, hey, smorgasbord. All right. Thanks for cutting that all up.
What is he, Rob from Tigerton? He's a hard worker.
He is. He's working. He's working it. The farmers are all working it today.
Darn right.
Which is surprising given the rain that came down last weekend. So I'm really glad to get some field work done. We talked to Hans on Tuesday. Hopefully he's been back in the field getting things done. But however you're joining us across the Civic Media Radio Network, through the app, through social media, or by podcast, it's nice to have you along the way here. My question for you was about last night, and was your evening as Wisconsin perfect as it seemed out there, especially up here? I've already mentioned the fresh cut hay. We had a fire pit going. We had a baseball game, you know, playing in the background. If you're by a lake like we are, you could, you know, hear some outboard engines. Not mine yet, but soon. It was just a perfect night. Hope you had a nice evening as well, because I'm sure with a weekend coming, we're probably going to get back into a chance of rain. So enjoy these week nights while you get them. If you'd like to join the show, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-CIVIC. You can call us or text us, use the Civic Media app, tell us what you were up to last night, what makes it so Wisconsin perfect around here. And in fact, an hour from now, when we talk to meteorologist Brittany Merlot, we'll talk a bit about some regionalisms and what is it that, you know, makes Wisconsin unique compared to when you're traveling in other parts of the country. So stick around for that as well. All right, let's see what's coming up today. We're going to start with Joe Zepecki. It's Thursday, isn't it? Yes. So he'll be here shortly. One of the fundamental tenets of democracy is the ability of ordinary folks to petition their government without fear of retribution. Unless you signed a petition about a dozen years ago to recall Scott Walker for stripping away workers' rights. And ever since then, some conservative politicians have been putting those petition signers in a database in order to seek retribution at the right time. So we'll have that little tale of some people trying to weaponize democracy coming up a little later this hour. In the second hour, it's our Women Win Wisconsin segment powered by Motherhood for Good. So Nicole Slavin and Kate Duffy will be here, and they'll talk to Renee Papelham, part of a new breed of local candidates using social media to connect with voters and constituents. Because while an old man with tiny hands is busy rage tweeting, Renee is showing us videos around her district and getting us inside her head as well, sharing some personal thoughts about wanting to step up and serve her community in the Wisconsin legislature. And also, we'll have Luke Mathers joining us for a recap of last night's Top Chef Wisconsin episode, complete with chef testants.
Why do you do that? Like,
because you continue to play Paul McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time.
I haven't played that in literally days.
Is it on standby?
No.
Is it on standby?
It's not on standby.
Can you hit a button right now?
No, it's not. Okay. Sorry. Well, if you wanted this to be a bit, I could have made it a bit, but I didn't, because I do what I'm told here on the Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow show. So,
okay. All right. Fine. I won't do it. But if you look up on screen, you'll see that Tony from Hayward just put a one-word comment in YouTube. Chef Testants.
You know, And here's
Tony.
The thing is, I thought Tony. I always thought Tony was on my side, but you know what? You asked for it.
You know what? There's only one side here, and on this beautiful, almost summer morning, it's nice to be remembered that it will be so many months before we are exposed to Paul McCartney and the worst Christmas song ever.
I don't think you actually mean that.
I don't actually mean it, but it's definitely not one of my favorites. Not by any stretch of the imagination. It is not December, but we still have 30s in parts of Wisconsin, 39 up in Hayward, 47 here on Lake Wasota, Park Falls at 41, Wausau 45, Green Bay 45, La Crosse is at 51, it's 44 in Rapids, 49 in Oshkosh, 46 in Madison, but Greg, it says 37 in Waukesha, 47 over at Mitchell Field over by the lakeshore. And so I had to poke around just to make sure. And yeah, I think West Bend was at 39 and Mukwonago was like 38. So it's a little chilly out there by you.
Yeah, it's a lot different from the 50 degrees warmer it was when I was out of town.
Yeah, so you're still missing that, aren't you? But have your feet recovered from walking, you know, the 10 miles a day that it felt like as a tourist?
Yeah, they're good to go. I got good shoes. I bought these nice, they're shoes that were designed, I think, for service industry people, but now they've taken off and they're very popular, but they're very thick in the heel and it feels really good to walk in them because you just don't feel any pain in your ankles or your knees as I'm starting to feel as I get older by the second.
It's one of those things that, you know, you get to an age where you're like, you actually have to pay attention to shoes. And I learned a phrase from Sherry that there's something, and I'm starting to use it now with my own feet, Oprah shoes. Where when Oprah was doing her talk show, apparently she talked about shoes that they're very stylish, but she could only wear them onto the stage to her chair on the studio there and then out. She would never wear them in real life. So Oprah shoes are ones that look really good, but you better not have to walk a bunch during the day.
Pat, though I am not a woman, I don't identify as a woman, I could talk about women's shoes for a long time because I just find them to be such a punishment. Like, get some comfy flats, get some sneakers, do your thing. But high heels, why? I get that they look good, and if you want to wear them, wear them. That's your choice. But, they look so uncomfortable and so painful and mean.
Yeah. Yes. And a lot of it is still holdovers from, you know, a time when, again, women's styles were almost, you know, dictated to them.
Yeah.
And that is extremely unfortunate. And I hope that, you know, most people now dress the way that they want to. And look, if that includes heels or whatever you want to go through.
Yeah.
Give you a good example. The other day, Sherry plugged in her hair straightener. And it's a newer one. And it's got a little digital readout on it, which I'd never paid attention to. It's just somehow it caught my eye while I was shaving. I looked over at it, and it was like, you know, 180, 185, 190, 195, 200, 210, 220. I'm like, honey, how high does this thing go? Because it can now boil water. And she's like, oh, yeah, it gets up to like 300 or something. Like,
yeah!
300! I mean, I've heard, you know, with curling irons, you hear a woman when she gets burned. It's like, ow, you know, I didn't know it was like 300 degrees.
Yeah. Every man knows a woman. Any man who knows a woman who does their hair knows that at one point they've seen like that little brown strip of skin on their arm where they've burned themselves on a curling iron. Yep. And you just, from a young age, I'm like, why would you do that? But also, once again, I don't want to sit here and go, you'd be better off if you didn't wear makeup or did that stuff. Do your thing. Make yourself as beautiful as you feel comfortable. But all I'm saying is,
don't do it for me.
Don't do it for me, but also wear protective gloves, I guess, you know?
Something like that, you know? If I'm going to burn myself, it's going to be like the fire pit last night. The reason I bring that up is that last night, finally, because between rain or not being home or whatever, we have not had, you know, the fire pit going in a long time. And the conditions were finally right yesterday. You haven't heard me whine about buckthorn ever since the time about a year ago when we were able to uproot it. We were literally uprooting buckthorn. and we have all these roots.
Yeah.
And we're like, we have to get rid of these before they, you know, start sprouting again or something. So last night was finally the burning of the buckthorn roots. So we built a big old fire and then we threw those in there and I'm like, burn, baby, burn.
Did you play, you know? Like just doom, 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 burn the buckthorn?
Nope. What I did was I had Snapchat and I did a little snippet of the fire with the Tramps Disco Inferno, burn, baby, burn in the background and sent that to the family.
You are amazing. I love
I'm
it.
I'm a dork.
Next time you opine about, like, I don't know stuff about today's day, and like, you Snapchatted your buckthorn, Bernie. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I got that going for me.
Yeah.
By the way, with the new phone, remember I upgraded my iPhone earlier this week.
Uh-huh.
Snapchat was one. Many of the programs carried over just fine. Yeah. You know, and you just have to look at the phone and things work. But Snapchat was one of those where I was like, I'm going to need your password, you know, before you can start to use this. And like, I haven't been asked for a Snapchat password, and same went with one or two other apps on the phone. Where I'm like, I don't know.
Well,
and then you know, they were set up like in an email account so long ago that I don't use that email account anymore. So guess what? I didn't have the password for the old email account either. I'm like, what was the last password? And I honestly have a password manager. But it turns out you actually have to update that thing from time to time for it to do you any good.
And I will not wade into the world of Android versus iPhone, Google versus this. I'm a very do your thing jelly bean person. That's what I love about my Google Pixel phone is that I pay for a thing called Google One. This is not an endorsement, where it stores all my information in the cloud. And when I buy a new phone, all I have to do is put my new phone next to my old phone. They do a little rigmarole with each other, and then I press a button saying, would you like to upload? And it just uploads everything. Done. Passwords, contacts, pictures, everything.
And that's the difference is I did the exact same thing, and it did most everything.
Yeah.
But when there were still like one or two little things, like, how did it miss you? Now I got to go find that password. But yeah, by and large, it's much easier than it used to be.
Oh, the old days. Blech.
Oh, God. Hours. Don't miss that at all. Christian Yelich, Blake Perkins, and Willy Adames all hit home runs, and the Brewers beat the Cubs 10-6 Wednesday night. It was Yelich's first home run since April 10th, and it halted the Brewers' 32 2/3 inning scoreless streak against Cubs starting pitchers. The four-game series wraps up this afternoon. I'll tell you details on the other side of this quick pause, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Thursday morning. When you're here, you're up north. On this day in 1968, the Beatles began recording the White Album at Abbey Road Studios in London. They were fresh off a retreat to India. The first song they worked on is Revolution 1, the one that you're used to hearing with the guitars, you know, screaming at the beginning. You'll hear that in a little bit on today's history lesson. But this one's called Revolution 1, Take 18. And we're very mellow now, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing about the Beatles is that when did you say they started recording this record?
1968.
They would record three records in a year and a half and then break up.
Yeah.
Breakup notwithstanding, this is the idea of the old days of music where you're like, yeah, we released four records last year. What?
Yeah. Where now it's like a big, like, oh, it's been 4 years.
Yeah.
And now it's a big event. Everything is always a big event. So more in today's history lesson coming up in just a bit. Mentioned the Brewers and the Cubs are playing yet this afternoon. Colin Ray on the mound for the Brewers. 12:10 first pitch. Pregame starting at 11:35 this morning. News from the center in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine and Kenosha. Oshkosh Air Support and 98Q Country in Park Falls. The Vibes Only podcast from Courier is out. We've got the latest from Brian Derrick and Glennis Mahar. And the title of this week's episode, Is It Too Early for a Full-Blown Freakout? Because there are just some things this week. We learned, for example, this week about how the Washington Post knew more than 2 years ago about the Stop the Steal flag flying at a Supreme Court justice's house but decided it wasn't worth mentioning to the public. There's news outlets, Politico and the New York Times, that are saying Dems are in full-blown freakout mode. No, it's May. It's May, folks. But the New York Times, of course, wrote an article about, the tuned-out Trump-curious voters. They're Trump-curious because the Times published another story called Trump Leans Into His Outlaw Image as His Criminal Trial Concludes. And at that point, you can understand why some people might want to freak out. So go where you get your podcasts and look into the Vibes Only podcast from Courier Newsroom, along with so many other things you can find at couriernewsroom.com. You can get newsletters from friends, including Kia Vakil and Mark Jacob. So head on over to Courier Newsroom or wherever you get your podcasts for the Stop the Steal podcasts. And then, of course, here at Up North News, there's our own daily newsletter that's put together. And Christina Lorre includes a link to our interview recently with Matt Rothschild about a new podcast series he's working on for Civic Media, basically saving democracy, one pod at a time. There's articles there about getting ready for more extreme weather, because the weather has been getting more extreme because of a changing climate. And she also talks about a list of Wisconsin's best bakeries, especially on this National Scone Day, which, Mr. Bach, I'm going to be the first to admit, I've never been a big fan of scones. There's been like one, maybe two, that I've tried almost involuntarily, and it's like, okay, it's all right. But again, it's just there to dunk and make soggy. Well, then why don't you just make it soft to begin with? We call that a donut.
Pat, I've always said, and I will always say until the day I die, you can't spell scone without no.
So you're not a fan either.
No, I have the same feeling towards scones that I do about corn tortillas. I don't mind them if they're made well, and corn tortilla, if they're not made well, you're biting into rubber. You might break a tooth. But I've had really delicious scones that are made like hot and fresh, and then you get them right away and you're like, oh, this is it's like tough on the outside, but as soon as you bite in, it's like nice and chewy and it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I generally stay away from scones.
I will say, it just reminds me that from Top Chef last night, Dan Jacobs, the Milwaukee chef who's part of the competition, basically invented something last night. In last night's episode, he was trying to make a pita. The pitas were coming out too thick.
Yeah.
They kind of had the consistency of an English muffin on the inside. So it was like part pita, part muffin. So he called it a puffin. And the judges were like, I like it. I'll go along with it. Because it was fresh.
Yeah.
I don't know what it would be like after a day or two, but consider making a puffin next time. Not the bird, but the new pastry Dan Jacobs just invented.
Oh, some puffins and hummus. Oh, boy.
I'm going to go strawberry jam instead of the hummus, but, to each their own.
Hummus.
Live and let live.
Exactly.
Talking about Trump and his trial, jury deliberations will resume this morning. They concluded late yesterday with the panel asking the judge if they could rehear portions of testimony from former National Enquirer publisher David Pecker and former Trump fixer Michael Cohen. Jurors also requested to rehear the jury instructions again. They will take as long as they need to reach a unanimous verdict on the 34 various counts. They could go from 9:30 to 4:30 local time in New York City with a break for lunch. The judge said they could work as late as 6 p.m. if they wish. At the heart of the charges are reimbursements paid to Cohen for a hush money payment he made to porn actor Stormy Daniels in exchange for not going public with her claims about a 2006 sexual encounter with Trump in the waning days of the 2016 campaign, right after the Access Hollywood tape came out. The case is the first of Trump's four indictments to reach trial and the first ever criminal case against a former U.S. president. In news a little bit closer to home, I'm not sure, Greg, how I feel about this. I mean, I'm going to give you some perspective at the end of the story, but I wasn't crazy about a headline that says the Wisconsin Investment Board puts $187 million into Bitcoin and other cryptocurrency funds. Yeah, that's the face I'd be making. That was the face I made when I first saw it.
No. Yeah, who runs that board? A guy named, like, Tanson or Brenson or...
I don't have that here in front of me, but no, that's whatever it is. Now for some perspective on it. And this comes from a Journal Sentinel story by Ricardo Torres. The State of Wisconsin Investment Board is the first public institution in the country to invest in cryptocurrency. The board has invested a total of $187 million in funds and companies associated with Bitcoins and other crypto, according to a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC. The investment board manages the assets of the Wisconsin Retirement System, the State Investment Fund, and other funds. Now here's the perspective on it. This investment represents about 0.1% of the Wisconsin Investments Board's total assets of $156 billion. So one pension and retirement advisor referred to it as a relatively small yet speculative bet. And he made the point that, let's say, for some reason, as much as I think crypto is junk, but if it were to, say, double or triple in value, folks would be saying, hey, why didn't the investment board have at least a little something invested in it? On the other hand, if it craters, 0.1% is insignificant. It's just another day, Greg, of playing the ponies. But, you know, the SEC chair did say back in January that just because they're allowing crypto trading doesn't mean that it is without risks and has been used for all kinds of speculative, volatile, and even illicit activities. So I'm saying I wouldn't do it,
yeah.
But at 0.1%, just in case it, you know, really takes off. Okay. I'm not crazy about it, but.
I just hope they have a solid plan to be like, all right, evacuate, get out.
Yeah, please, please run for the exits the moment that y'all think it's necessary. Joe Zepecki joins us in a bit live from Lake Wasota. This is Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Wrightlaw. We're back now on this Thursday morning, as always, with Joe Zepecki. Joe, good morning. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Well, fine. I mean, it's game day. We're going to have Brewers Cubs this afternoon. You'll hear that on four Civic Media radio stations around the network. We'll tell you all about it Friday as well. But Mr. Zepecki is going to be at the game today. So I got to ask, with the return of Craig Counsell, are you a booer or a cheerer? What you going to do?
I've got a few hours left to decide, don't I? It might just be captured by the moment. No, I'm not really a boo bird kind of guy.
Okay. We know I'm on record.
Ill will. We're doing fine.
This is in my mind, this is what a lovely guy I am, that I have to find something. I have to turn Craig Counsell into my, you know, my straw man or something, because, you know, I love everybody else.
There are a few of them in our politics you could boo instead.
Oh, I know. And now that takes us to our first political story here. And I don't know, you got to pick one. Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker, or, you know, failed investigator Michael Gableman, the former Supreme Court Justice, who's leading the way, turning in signatures for a recall election, for a recall that would literally just be a couple of months. So yeah, do you pick a side in this one?
I don't think you have to, but if you push me into a corner, I'm with Robin Voss on this.
Wow.
I think there should probably be a cutoff period after which you can't be recalled because you'll be standing for election, right? There's, like, we know there's a rule about how long into a term that set, right? You can't be recalled on day one in office. You have to serve a period of time. And I think it's pretty common sense that you would have something that once you are such and such date before an election, you also shouldn't be able to be recalled anymore. This is silly. This is nonsense. And, that doesn't mean I'm not going to be popping popcorn and watching as the Republicans in this state continue to, you know, go after one another and erupt in a full-blown civil war amongst themselves. Like, okay, guys, good luck.
But look, I think the whole point, this decision to have Gableman, you know, front and center, carrying the box of petitions into the Elections Commission office, I think it only, his presence is only a reminder of the buffoonery that was the Gableman quote-unquote investigation and the literally millions of tax dollars that it wasted. seemed to me, if there were more savvy people in the recall, they'd say, well, I'm glad you're here to arouse the troops, but why don't you go stand over there while the TV cameras are here?
But they're not savvy. If they were savvy, they wouldn't have messed this up the first time through.
Right.
People like to be grumpy and grouchy, and, you know, I guess this is what they have just really latched on to, but kind of a non-story in my point of view.
I think it would be, except, like I said, Gableman there offers up this visual reminder, which takes us to our next story this week, and that is the story of a member of the Universities of Wisconsin Board of Regents, Robert Atwell, one of the final two Scott Walker appointees on the board, who confirmed this week that he will not step down, even though his term has expired, so that Governor Tony Evers can have a successor on the board. And again, I don't know what you gain by this other than to present the public another reminder that this all started with GOP chicanery, to pull one out of my old man dictionary.
Yeah, I mean, here we go again. And to your point, there are 18 appointees. And as I understand it, 16 of them are currently Evers appointees. So that means we've got 16 Evers appointees, two remaining Walker appointees. I don't know that this one single seat is really determining the change of any policies or outcomes among the Board of Regents. It seems pretty silly. It seems awfully self-important of Mr. Atwell to go to these lengths and to make himself a pawn in a political game. I thought the letter from the university folks was fine and appropriate. Like, hey, this is kind of silly. We hope you'll reconsider. But also, like, who the hell cares? Because that's the other thing, right? Like, it's not going to prevent the universities from doing anything that they need to do. It's just nonsense for nonsense sake. And yeah. I guess that is part of the standard operating procedure of the Republican Party in 2024. So
it seems a way to present yourself as, you know, a true believer if you're not willing to do something that in an earlier era, meaning just a couple of years back, you wouldn't have dreamed of doing because your mama raised you better than that.
Yeah. And so we do these like least punk rock things ever to stick it to the man. And it's to stay on for another couple Board of Regents meetings. Like, what are we doing?
Ooh, you rebel. We talked a day or two ago about how one of the new PACs out there running ads criticizing Tammy Baldwin.
Speaking of standard operating procedure, every campaign has a super PAC.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, so here's a PAC that Eric Hovde's brother is pretty much the sole funder of this. And it just kind of struck me as, you know, a case of, you know, rules about, you know, PACs and non-collusion. You know, those are rules that are for the little people. But it also just strikes me as this continued reminder that it's not just an individual with money, it's family money that comes into this, whether you're talking the Uline family or now the Hovde family and certainly other examples that are out there. And again, Joe, we don't use the word oligarch outside of describing, you know, really rich, powerful Russian business families. But if it slips into the lexicon more and more here in this country, here's another example why.
Yeah, instead of calling them oligarchs, let's call them people with so much money, they don't know what to do with it. So they think, I'll just go play politics. Like some people play the ponies or go to the casino in Vegas. Listen, I guess the thing Eric Hovde has going for him is at least his own family supports him. I'm old enough to remember when Kevin Nicholson was running against Tammy Baldwin. He didn't get the nomination, but remember that Nicholson's parents maxed out to Tammy Baldwin? Yeah. So I guess we can conclude that Eric Hovde will be at least a little bit more successful than other Republicans who have run against Tammy Baldwin, because at least his own family is supporting him. I will say this. I've got a brother. I love my brother so much. He's great. He's not listening. He's across state lines in Minnesota. If he ever ran for the United States Senate, I would do everything I could to support him, but I wouldn't do so in a way where I wasn't allowed to talk to him about how I could be helpful. And that is what you're talking about, is if
right.
if they're really going to run ads and spend money, then there needs to be a firewall where the Hovde campaign, which Eric Hovde is a part of, and Brother Hovde cannot talk strategy. They cannot talk about how best to, you know, spend resources, make the case.
I mean, come on, we're getting into Ginny Thomas and Clarence Thomas cat, you know, like, oh, Ginny never talked to Justice Clarence Thomas about any of this stuff.
Well, maybe they haven't shared a bedroom in 20 years.
Come on.
Who can say who's inside of another person's marriage?
It's that kind of talk, Joseph Pecky, that allows shenanigans to go forward.
But you beat me to my punchline, which was, you know, maybe, despite the fact that Kevin Nicholson's folks didn't like, maybe this is Brother Hovde's way of saying he doesn't like his brother all that much, because this way he doesn't have to talk to him. I love my brother enough. I would want to talk to him.
This one's a little bit inside baseball, but we're going to talk about congressional races in Wisconsin. In the first congressional district, currently represented by Republican Brian Steil, and once upon a time represented for a short time by Democrat Peter Barca. Peter Barca is running again for the seat now, and he has made a list. It's called the Red to Blue list. It's a list of Republican seats that are being targeted by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCCC. And all it means is if you're on that list, you're one of the highest priority targets. More national money is going to come to you. What does that say in terms of, you know, Peter Barca being on that list? Does it mean that we now have, you know, two, if not three, bona fide congressional races to watch in the state?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's great for Peter. I think it's great for Democrats that they have a real candidate with a real shot in that race. Part of the – you reminded me of the sort of absurdity of this. As more people are more frustrated with politicians than ever before, we get – you know, matchups like this where it's a congressman versus a former congressman. We're getting a president versus a former president. And I just want to acknowledge, I do think that's part of people's frustration. Now, listen, Peter is not a guy who, when he walks in, you go, oh, boy, oh, there goes a congressman. Peter is as salt of the earth, like good old boy, you know, Kenosha, as you can get. But it is a sign to me that, like, a lot of people's frustrations – are not hard to understand, but this will be a tough race for Brian Steil, the toughest one he's had. And yeah, that accrues to not just the benefit of voters in the first congressional district, but hopefully all those candidates run for state assembly and state Senate down there and statewide, ultimately, where the big ticket races of Baldwin and Biden are. So it's great. That money will spend, and it will go to good use in the hands of Peter Barca's campaign.
It all helps because obviously he knows how to fundraise. He's done it for years in the assembly. Other folks looking up in the 8th district, Kristen Lierley raised more than $500,000 in 6 weeks. She says she was the highest raising House challenger on the website Act Blue in April. The vast majority of support coming from those low dollar grassroots donors.
That's amazing.
Good for Kristen. Yeah, 17,000 donors in 6 weeks. I know we get similar numbers from Katrina Shanklin and Rebecca Cook over in the 3rd Congressional District. All in all, again, just to say, you don't have to be happy with, you know, the amount of money in politics, but that Wisconsin is a state to watch, that there are close races in here, and that if you lived in plenty of other places, your vote just wouldn't matter nearly as much, no matter which side you were on.
It's also a really, I think, good sign for the optimism and enthusiasm about voting and how, you know, locked in people are. This is great.
There is a Dane County judge who heard arguments this week on a potential legal challenge to Act 10, Scott Walker's union busting law. Then, of course, I wasn't surprised to hear from folks on the right who said that the judge's name was seen on the recall Walker petitions that were passed around, more than a decade ago now. So it raises these two questions. If that is the judge's signature on the recall Walker petition, is it a clear need to recuse himself from the case, and or is it a clear sign of the continued weaponization of the democratic process? Because Wisconsinites should be able to sign any kind of petition without fear. But now you have a Republican Party that has weaponized something that is a foundational part of citizenship.
I'm just so damn sick of Republicans whining all the time. When did they become so whiny? They don't actually like care that somebody signed this. They just want to play the victim card. Oh, the judge in the Trump trial in New York is corrupt and crooked, and how dare he, and he should recuse. They're not whining about the judge in Florida who's helping Trump and saying they should recuse because Judge Cannon was appointed to her job by Donald Trump. They pick moments of opportunity to whine because they are whiny whiners who love to whine and be victims. And I got to be honest, like, I don't know why big, strong, tough guys out there who know they're tough and they respect toughness and want to go back to the days when men were men, why they vote for and support a political party that their only move is to whine like little crybabies. So, you know what? I think recusal rules for judges should be clear. And I think judges should follow them. And if, in this case, there's no rule saying that this judge has to step aside, then shut the hell up, stop your whining, save it for some comedian who offends you because you don't like their jokes or somebody didn't like their jokes and you're mad at their audience. You can find something else to whine about, you whiners.
Well said. Joe Sopecki, we'll see you in June, Dairy Month. Bring your milk. Tell me you drink milk.
Can I bring chocolate milk? Gotta keep those brown cows happy.
This doesn't work that way. See you later. Today's history lesson is coming up in just a bit. You're up north. You know why these guys were as famous as they were, as popular?
Why?
Because they're good.
Yeah.
They weren't just first at a lot of things. They happened to be good at the thing they were doing first.
Yeah. Yes. They really cared about their craft.
Look, I have the whole Beatles anthology, the whole, you know, whatever it was, 18 CDs or whatever it is. I've listened to it top to bottom. Not every song's a winner. Okay. Not every song's a winner. But there are so many that you would still play all the way through today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love Me Do. It was the number one song this day in 1964, 60 years ago today, written by John Lennon and Paul McCartney as teenagers.
Jeez.
That's what kicks off today's history lesson, which is rather Beatles heavy, which was not necessarily my intent, but as I'm looking through all the things that stood out on this day, again, it's like, you know, they're pretty good at this thing that they do. So you'll hear a few other Beatles tunes here. But first, to tell you, let's see, that was 1964. On this day in 1966, Dolly Parton got married. She married Carl Thomas Dean, the owner of a Nashville asphalt road paving business. So what is that, 58 years?
Yeah.
Not bad. Not a bad starter marriage. You know, it's pretty good. let's see. We mentioned earlier, and we played a clip, on this day in 1968, fresh off that retreat to India, the Beatles began recording the White Album at Abbey Road Studios in London. We played a variation of the first song they worked on, which was Revolution. It was a rather slow, non-traditional version. Here's the version you know. You know, when I got the phone updated, I reset a couple of the alarms, some of the ringtones and things.
Yeah.
Wouldn't the beginning of that make for a good alarm?
Oh, my gosh.
That'd get you out of bed.
Every morning, I would just be like, I'm awake.
If I don't have a heart attack and die, then I'm ready to start the day.
Yep.
The predecessor of Memorial Day, known as Decoration Day, was observed in the U.S. for the first time on this day in 1868 after a proclamation by the veterans group Grand Army of the Republic. On this day in 1973, Beatle George Harrison released his second post-Beatles album, Living in the Material World. It went to number one, released on this day in 1973, and included this particular single. Yeah, that's George Harrison. You need one strum to figure that out.
That country sound he did in the 70s, that... Give me love, give me
love, give me peace on earth. All right, we'll leave you alone, Beatles-wise, for the rest of the segment here. On this day in 2000, Eminem's second major label album, the Marshall Mathers LP, became the fastest-selling rap album ever, selling 1.75 million copies in its debut week. We'll play a little clip later. And I mean little, because it's probably all you can play on the radio. Happy birthday to Wynonna Judd. She turns 60 years old today. She was born Christina Claire Simonella in Kentucky this day in 1964. On this day in 1922, the Lincoln Memorial was dedicated in Washington, D.C. On this day in 1911, the first Indy 500 was run. On this day in 1911, I always have to emphasize it was 1911, when I tell you that the winner, the average speed, was a blistering 74 miles an hour, which I believe back in 1911, anybody that was going 74 probably thought for sure they were dead.
They were definitely from Illinois. Oh, yeah, taking you drive fast down there.
Yeah, he did that. And one more birthday. Happy 53rd birthday to Idina Menzel. I'm never going back. The past is in the past. Let it go. All right, now I have a confession to make. My wife and daughters are among those who are huge, huge fans of Wicked.
Yeah.
I didn't know till I was putting this list together that she was, you know, she had the main role in that along with Kristen Chenoweth.
Yeah.
And that's really how she kind of got to be known. The Disney movie, you know, Frozen is what got me. But I also, I hope you didn't hear it, but I locked up in a microsecond of panic when I saw her name there, because I immediately thought of the way John Travolta butchered her name once introducing her. And if how he had said it, I don't remember how he said it. If that would have popped into my head, I would have been wrecked. I would not have been able to say it.
I mean, the thing is that it's not a hard name to say.
It's not that hard, but once somebody does what he did to it, you're like, you can't unthink of that possibility. Much like, and I know I'm not the only one, many broadcasters, sports and news especially, would look at a golfer's name, Chichi Rodriguez. And for years, after Les Nessman butchered it on WKRP in Cincinnati, looked at that, and in your head, you're going, please don't say Chai Chai Rodriguez. Please don't say Chai Chai Rodriguez. But yeah, Chichi Rodriguez. So yeah, Idina Menzel.
Let's hear it.
One and only Adele Dazeem.
Adele Dazeem. I mean, those aren't even, I don't even know if those, Adele Dazeem. That's a whole other person.
How do you see that? That's clearly like you didn't have your contacts in or the right.
I'm looking
glasses
at her name right now, Adele Dazeem. No. That's not even Adele's like last name.
I know. But again, much like Chichi Rodriguez, you got to be careful from that point on. So that was our moment of panic for today, which got the heart going. We mentioned that it is National Scone Day today, so enjoy your doorstop. This is National E-Bike Day. This is Mint Julep Day. And I know Sherry's going to make one this evening because she has such a healthy mint plant growing on the deck over here. It's over west facing. So the sun hits it in the afternoon, and you can just, when she makes a mint julep in the evening with a little Knob Creek bourbon, that is one happy camper over there.
I have all this mint. Whatever am I going to do?
What will I do? No idea. This is a World MS Day. And finally, this is National Hug Your Cat Day.
Good luck.
I would not recommend. except that everybody who is, you know, watch the video feed of this show on Mondays when Selena Heller is here, that cat of hers, with, you know, having her little girl, Emery,
yeah,
having that little girl, I mean, just abuse that cat eight ways to Sunday, just like the cartoon character. You know, like, I will name it George, and I will hug it and squeeze it and pet it. And that cat has the patience of Job, just takes it because the cat knows it's loved. So if you've got a cat like that, hug your cat.
And
don't hug
don't,
anybody else's cat.
Hug your dog. That's what I did last night when I got home. I hugged her so much.
That is a very fine alternative. Much more in the second hour of Up North News Radio.